the week of November 8th, 2020, this is Showbiz Sandbox, episode 517, take two, the podcast that brings you all the dirt on the news making headlines around the entertainment world. In Los Angeles, I'm Jay Sperling Reich.
And at the North Pole, I'm Michael Giltz. Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what...
What are you doing?
Well, it's KOST FM in Los Angeles is the radio station that pioneered the all Christmas music format. They switched to all Christmas music. They began after 9/11. That year, they were like, we need some help here. And they said, let's just play Christmas music from now on. And they switched to all Christmas. Ratings doubled. They went through the roof. And now a lot of radio stations switch to an all holiday music format, and they do it earlier and earlier than ever every year. First used to be right after Thanksgiving. They were like, maybe Halloween. This year, KOST-FM was like, oh, we can't do it during the election. When can we do it? They didn't wait till Saturday, but on Thursday, they flipped the switch and started playing their... They like polled their listeners and they said, do you want to hear Christmas music? Do you want to have something? They're like, yes, please. Anything, anything to get us away. So in the middle of the election week, they say, Christmas music, here we come.
You know, I was going into the grocery store around here recently, and they were putting up Christmas decorations and Christmas like products. They were actually putting out Christmas candy canes and things like that. And I saw the guy. I said, "Really?" And he just looked at me and went, "Well, somebody's got to provide a little cheer around here."
Exactly. Now, you know, during Christmas, you can listen to Christmas songs by the great a cappella jazz group Take Five. But you said Take Two.
Yes, I did say Take Two. Yes. Take
Two as in... What happened last week? We recorded an entire show. What's going on?
Yes, and I would like to thank all of the people that reached out to me on my own Twitter account, on our Showbiz Sandbox Twitter account, that said, hey, I know that there's an election on and that we're not done refreshing our browsers yet, because that's all we were doing was, what's the count? Are you doing an episode this week? Well, yes, we did an episode this week. Unfortunately, my computer, basically, and the computer that we do the show on, it broke down. And so it was over at Apple. And meanwhile, I plugged my mixer and my microphone into a laptop computer, which apparently, I'm not going to get into the weeds here, although I guess I'm too late. Basically, the sample rates were different and there was something wrong.
How much difference could it make?
Well, okay, here's the thing. You said right after you said, hey, what are we doing on this week's show? And you said, you know, you really sound like your voice is much higher this week. And I was like, oh, great. So, you know, something else I have to look forward to as I get older. My voice is rising. But this is what I sounded like. Well, this week on Showbiz Sandbox, we are actually in line to vote. All right, truly, I'm in line to get a new iMac because my last one imploded. Unfortunately, I'll have to wait until, get this, December to get a new one. Michael needs a new Kindle, by the way, and it turns out many of those models aren't available until mid-November or December either.
I don't know if you can hear the difference.
It sounds like, honey, I shrunk the kids. You know, you're down to like pint size, 1 inch tall, going, hey, Michael, get me out of the cereal.
And you said that, and I was like, oh, it's probably just Michael. You know, he's probably, I don't know.
No, it didn't sound that bad when I was listening to you, but I could tell something was different. But when you did the playback, it was a disaster.
And I contacted one of the services we use, and they said, oh, yeah, well, we know exactly what that is. Your sample rate is off, and you have to bring it into this and touch your forehead, and you have to be chewing gum and walking and talking at the same time as you. It's got to be a cold day in Detroit, but not in Michigan. I just was like, okay, you know what? With the election, nobody's going to care about anything we have to say. So let's maybe just hold some of the news from last week and kind of mention it this week.
Well, we got other news too. So what are we going to talk about this week?
Well, this week on Showbiz Sandbox, we are still counting the votes, okay? And I mean that literally, actually. Seriously, why didn't we think to start counting the votes as they came in rather than waiting till the pile of ballots was so darn big? Oh, well, in any case, the U.S. election is over, but the entertainment industry goes on. This week, in the first of two big new gaming devices goes on sale. Both of them are going on sale, I guess what, this week and the next week, right?
That's right.
Yeah. The latest Xbox console is out November 10th, so that's this week. And next week, the new Sony PlayStation will arrive. So that's just great. Those companies will be battling for literally billions of dollars, and people will have one more reason not to go to the movies. That's just fantastic. Although, wait, what? Like, there are no new movies to go see anyway, right? I mean,
So what's the difference? Okay, I guess Michael doesn't know what the difference is. Okay, on Inside Baseball, we'll talk about Disney, which pulled two more big films from the schedule. In fact, my point taken. Cinemark promises to be flexible about windows, Cinemark being a major movie chain here in the U.S., and the National Association of Theater Owners says if Congress doesn't offer relief, 70% of all North American movie theaters may go bankrupt. Of course, during Big Deal or Big Whoop, we'll discuss some of the week's top headlines. But first, as always, we turn it over to entertainment journalist extraordinaire Michael Giltz to fill us in on last week's box office.
That's right. We're looking at box office around the world. We're pulling information from everywhere we can. Come back, ComScore. Come back, Shane. We miss you. But anyway, we are looking at movies around the world, and China and Japan are doing great. They are on fire. Europe, of course, is shutting back down in many markets. The United States has been in fits and starts, but Japan, they are the number one market in the world right now, and they have the number one movie. It's Demon Slayer, the movie, Infinity Train. That grossed another $47 million. That's at $200 million worldwide. That movie is on fire. At number two around the world is the Chinese drama Sacrifice, a war film set during the Korean battle. That made another $20 million. That's at $126 million worldwide. At number three is the Chinese documentary Patriotic Omnibus, My People, My Homeland, also translated as Hometown. So however you find it, under whatever title, it grossed $12 million this week. It's at $415 million worldwide. And then we have finally a new film. This is a Chinese crime thriller. It's called Back to the Wharf, and it made $7 million. So it had a good, solid, nice little opening week. Not a big budget film, so nice to see. Then at number five, we have another Japanese film, but this one is playing in China. It's Digimon Adventure, Last Evolution. It made another $6 million. It's at $18 million worldwide and counting. Most of that coming from China. It's made a lot more in China than it has in Japan. Go figure. At number six is the Kevin Costner film, Let Him Go. There's a little bit of irony for you. That title in this week, Let Him Go. That made $4 million basically in North America on its opening week. That's followed right by Honest Thief, another sort of action tense drama starring Liam Neeson. That made another $4 million. That's at $21 million worldwide.
I thought you were going in a completely different direction when you were like, that's another, I was like, another movie about the election? What?
Right below that is Jiang Ziya, the Chinese animated film. That also made $4 million. That's at $240 million worldwide. And Tenet pulled in another $4 million, finally officially passing, as we knew it would, the $350 million mark worldwide. It's basically done, but it did make $350 million worldwide. They wish it was $700 million, but with North America basically not checking in on that movie, only about $50 million, that's where it's going to end up. Leap is...
Can I tell you something? That reputation of that movie, the reputation, you would say, or the advance word, the word of mouth on that movie, is such that it is so hard to understand, okay, that one of our senior writers at Celluloid Junkie said that she and her boyfriend went to go see it, and they arrived a little late, okay, and they thought, oh, well, we don't understand this movie because we missed the first 5 minutes, right? We missed the first 5 minutes, so we don't understand it. They get out of the movie, and it turns out that they walked into the wrong auditorium. They showed up in that auditorium 40 minutes late.
Oh, that's funny.
and so they went, wait, how come we're out 40 minutes early? How is that? Now, this movie, Tenet, Christopher Nolan's latest, is going to be released sometime in December on DVD, Blu-ray, digital, etc. It will hit home for home viewing before it is ever released, or frankly, ever released in New York City or Los Angeles.
Well, that's why it made such little money. I don't think it's that complicated to follow. If you read sci-fi or whatever, I think it's pretty easy.
It's totally complicated if you show up 40 minutes late.
Well, but many people have talked about that, but I think it's pretty graspable. It's just the action as they display it on screen. It's easy to understand and hard to follow, whereas The Matrix is maybe, you know, all a bunch of gobbledygook, but you don't care because it looks cool. That's my take on it. Right below Tenet is Leap, the Gong Li film. That's about the China women's volleyball team. $3 million it made this week. It's at $125 million. Here in North America, we have a horror flick called Come Play, a low-budget flick. That made another $3 million this week. It's at $6 million and counting. The War with Grandpa, the De Niro comedy, that's chugging along. That's at $20 million worldwide, about to match its budget. Then we have Coffee or Tea in China. That made $2 million. The Story of Shibao, that made $2 million. And Oversized Love, which is a film about the prejudice against plus-sized women, the Lizzies, the Lizzos of the world, that made another $1 million. It seems to be fading fast at $4 million. So there are movies playing. There are movies making a lot of money, just not in North America and increasingly not in Europe.
Well, in Europe, everything's closing down.
That's right. What countries do we got shutdowns happening again in?
Well, okay. You have all of the UK. You have France. You have Germany.
Oof. Are there any other countries? Or are they all others open up or kind of open up?
Spain is open. Poland is open.
Italy.
The Netherlands is open. Italy is open. But not in all parts of Italy. Mm. So things are slowly going back into lockdown.
Yeah. Well, and here in North America, the studios remain in lockdown. That's the best way to put it. A couple more films have been yanked from December. Disney is taking some of the Fox films it inherited, Death on the Nile and Free Guy, and saying, nope. We hope we can make a lot of money on these, and we're not going to put them in theaters. Or maybe they're thinking we'll put them on streaming. Who knows? We'll find out later. But Death on the Nile and the Ryan Reynolds movie, Free Guy, is being pulled from the theaters. Free Guy especially is a very big budget movie. Whereas Death
Did you see the trailer they cut for that? They like did a Zoom call where they said, coming at Easter, coming at Christmas, coming this July 4th. Like they basically did a trailer like, we don't know when this movie is coming out, but it's coming out. So let's just get like all the holidays in just in case.
Well, it's not going to be a good holiday for employees at Universal. They are firing hundreds of employees over the next 8 weeks. Most of those cuts will be in TV and streaming. They're going to fire about 300 people in all by late December. Merry Christmas and happy holidays. Or early 2021. And they're eliminating about 500 positions. I'm sorry. That's ESPN. ESPN is also firing hundreds of employees. And they are going beyond the people they fired to just say, these 500 positions, we're never filling them again.
I mean, I think that it's funny that you kind of, not funny, the wrong word to use, but it doesn't surprise me that you got a little confused there as to which company you were talking about, you know, because there are a lot of people laying off. You got Lionsgate, Disney, ESPN, also being Disney, Universal. I think that some of these, as you mentioned, Michael, some of these are not coming back because I think these companies wanted to do this for a long time. They just didn't have
no one was ever
reason.
Stopping them.
You can fire people
whenever you want. Nobody's gonna say if you're too bloated. The idea that they couldn't fire people before is not true. They will get rewarded in the stock market for firing employees. Sadly, wrongly, but that's the truth.
Well, I think now they can all do it under the guise of it's not that we're mismanaged. It's that we have to deal with COVID.
Yeah, no one's ever going to criticize a company for saying, you know, we're a little bloated and we're trimming the fat. No one's ever going to say, oh, you're mismanaged. They're going to say, yeah, that's what you should do. At least investors. It's sad, but true. Yeah, Disney is firing dozens more employees in other areas like studio and theatrical. TV cuts are to come. Lionsgate is firing 15% of its workforce, but it's unclear what that number would be. That's not sure what their total employee count is. I guess it's better to be working in video games, huh?
Yeah, well, here's the thing before we move on. The reality is that you just mentioned these jobs will not be filled.
Some of them.
But for the people that remain behind, and I've been through some of these cuts in the past where when you're left behind, you know, it's like
jobs.
Yeah, exactly. You're basically told, well, no, now you're doing that work. And well, okay, do I get a raise of any? No.
No. You're
lucky to
have a job.
You kept your job. And so what winds up happening is burnout very quickly. And it happened to me. It happened to almost everybody that I was with at that time. They all eventually burned out because you're doing too much and it works short term. Yes, you get a nice little stock bump, a stock price bump, but over the long term, doesn't always work.
That's true, but it does work if you're in video games because they are on fire. So, as we mentioned before, Xbox has a new console coming out. Sony PlayStation, they have a new console coming out. There's a lot of money at stake here. A lot of people love video games. It's a huge, huge business, and we know nothing about it.
No, we do. We know that whenever we watch people play, we're like, how do they do it? What is going on? Okay, we know that we can't compete with the people that are younger than us. That's what we know about video games.
That's true. It's cool stuff. I've watched it every once in a while, and it's cool to see. And you can see how it's getting more and more artistic and more rich in terms of gaming and the work that they're doing. It's just something that we don't follow a lot. But, you know, their streaming is, I mean, streaming is sort of coming to video games. They're still buying consoles, but one of them wants to push the idea of having a subscription service. The other one does not. But you also see Apple, they're pushing a subscription service. So you can see that streaming model pushing into the gaming world rather than getting people to buy, you know, games, standalone games that cost $50, $60, $70. You've got both never-ending worlds like World of Warcraft, which is online, purely online, and you've got more and more subscription services. So that is roiling the gaming world, and we'll keep an eye on it, report on it as best we can. And we do have some breaking news. It's a game adjacent. It's in the comic book world. DC Comics is promoting Marie Javins to editor-in-chief. I am assuming she is the first female to head DC Comics. I would bet money on it, you know, but
she won't be the last.
That, man, that's true. Yeah. And by the way, all those people sick of our political stuff. Well, we'll try to lower it down, but it's never going away. We got January. It's just endless stuff. Yeah. About you don't care what we think about politics. We appreciate that. We try to keep it to a minimum. Though Sperling sometimes gets carried away.
What? Wait, what? So, but you know, that said, you know, just to show you how video games make us feel old. Okay. I think it was Sunday, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, the congresswoman from the Bronx, from New York City. She was on, I think it was CNN. She was talking to Jake Tapper. And he congratulated her on her second term, being elected to her second term, that she is now a sophomore congresswoman. And that must feel good. And she said, oh, yes, it's great to level up. I was like, wait,
yeah, there you go.
Did you just slip in a video game reference to a
Well, she had a good success on Twitch, like we mentioned.
Yeah.
And by the way, I guess it was inevitable that there would be a woman heading DC Comics, because up until now, as of August of this year, I believe, when they restructured DC Comics, she was co-editor-in-chief with Michelle R. Wells. So two women were co-editing the DC Comics, and now one woman has taken charge.
So it was like John Delaney's joke of, you know, there's an old guy contest on November 3rd. One of the old guys will win.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, I think nonetheless, it's a big deal when Ocasio-Cortez can go online and gain a big audience from Twitch. You know, one of her big takeaways is not, oh, we need to be more like Republicans, which is what she says got Democrats into trouble for 30 years. But we need to be savvier. We need to do better digital marketing, digital advertising, things like going on Twitch to play video games. You know, that's the stuff that's going to work.
Well, you know, that may be so. I don't necessarily know anything that's going to work in politics, which is why I stick to entertainment. In fact, I've got a few stories that, if that's a big deal, this whole DC thing and this whole, you know, digital campaigning,
AOC, the digital world,
AOC, if that's a big deal. What about some of the stories in Big Deal or Big Whoop this week? Big Deal or Big Whoop is our weekly segment where we discuss the top headlines in entertainment and tell you whether they're really important or just overhyped nonsense.
Bring it on. Bring it on. I'm ready.
Okay. Well, our first story, hip-hop mogul Jay-Z. Big deal or big, no, just kidding. He is making like Willie Nelson, and he is launching a line of cannabis products. There's gold in them there leaves, and Jay-Z wants some of that gold. Like many stars, Jay-Z is seeing less and less income from sales. And let's see, carry the one, hold it, plus two. Yeah, he's seeing no income from touring right now at all, literally zero. It's a big fat goose egg. But whether you're Gwyneth Paltrow or Reese Witherspoon or Mr. Beyonce, diversifying and extending your brand has been all the rage for years now. And going into legal pot is just the next logical step. I mean, we're going into melatonin gummies.
Sweet.
Right?
I mean, yes.
Yeah.
Next week.
Okay. Plus it pairs, you know, all of this pairs very nicely with that whiskey from Ryan Reynolds and that tequila from George Clooney. So is this a big deal or a big whoop?
Well, it is a big whoop, right? Everybody's doing this. This is kind of a sea change. You did not see Hollywood stars doing this in the old days. There was always merchandise around, you know, Shirley Temple or Little Orphan Annie or Charlie Chaplin. Stuff would get sold, but diversifying into other businesses like this, this is more of a newer trend. People were doing it in the 70s and the 80s. It's really something that I think any star with sort of any broader interest is looking at and seeing what they can do. And they're doing it. It's not just about, you know, setting up a production company and paying yourself to sit in an office and play producer. It's about really finding different businesses just because you can, I guess. It's not enough money for the movies you make.
Yeah, I mean, think about it. If you are a producer, you are still waiting for somebody else to say yes. You're constantly working to get someone else to say yes, as opposed to turning around and saying, look, I don't need you. I don't need you to say yes because I'm selling to a completely different constituency that, yes, you brought to me.
If you're a marijuana mogul, you can light it up anytime you want.
Oh, I see what you did there. By the way, I'm just wondering, all the people that heard that melatonin joke and went, wait a second, you guys don't need to sell melatonin gummies. You're doing fine just doing what you're doing. Put me to sleep.
Some real music news. Bruce Springsteen last week became the first act in history to chart an album in the top five on the Billboard charts for 6 decades and counting. So he hasn't hit number one, but he has hit the top five in 6 different decades. That's pretty amazing. Of course, people couldn't do that before, like Sinatra and Bing Crosby, because they didn't have the Billboard album chart and they didn't have albums. But I imagine those guys stretched over 6 decades as well. Still a great accomplishment.
What did you think of his most recent album, Bruce Springsteen's most recent album?
I'm mixed on it. I got to listen to it some more, but there's some tracks I love, but I'm not blown away.
Yeah, likewise. And you know I'm a huge Springsteen fan.
Oh, there's some songs I would kill to hear in concert, like Ghosts. There's a great little acapella break in the middle of the song that you know is just going to kill live. It's going to be great.
Yeah, and I think he actually does write some of those songs knowing that they will be recorded live. Oh, I don't know who tracked
played live
album.
Played live. Oh, absolutely, of course.
Sorry, yes, played live, not recorded. They are recorded. They will be played live. But yeah, I mean, it's yeah. I'm a big Springsteen fan. This one leaves me. I do need to listen to it once or twice more.
Yeah.
But now, you know, one of the stories you mentioned last week, one of the stories that has changed from week to week. We talked about Johnny Depp last week in our missing episode. Maybe people listen to us all the time at twice the speed. Who knows? But a story that changed and evolved is this next story. Because days after Johnny Depp lost a libel case when a judge declared there was enough evidence for a tabloid in the UK to label the actor, let's not pull any punches here, a wife beater. Okay, those were the words used. Depp was booted off the Warner Brothers franchise Fantastic Beasts. He posted a statement on Instagram saying the studio asked him to leave the project where Depp plays the big bad, and he said he agreed. That series contains 2 films, with the first grossing $800 million and the second $650 million. Warner Brothers would like to turn that around, but having one of the most toxic teams around isn't helping. Depp was called the wife beater, and that charge was held up in court. Co-star Ezra Miller was seen on video choking a woman in a bar. And creator J.K. Rowling, of course, you know, go to Twitter. She's become a pariah there. Once a darling of the left and young people in general, she has gone all out in her attacks on transgender people for some reason, undercutting the very message of the Harry Potter and Fantastic Beasts universe. With Depp gone, will Ezra Miller be next? Big deal or big whoop?
Well, it's a big deal. It's a big franchise. They want to see another, you know, 5 or 6 movies in this coming out. And they don't want to be in a press junket answering questions about why Johnny Depp and Ezra Miller are on this project. They don't want to be talking about J.K. Rowling either. They want to talk about Fantastic Beasts. And they said, you know what? Declining gross in the second movie, a film I thought was actually better. Neither of them is great. And Johnny Depp, just not worth the bother. And he's one of the biggest stars in the world.
Yeah, you know, I actually spoke with somebody in the UK in the legal profession over the last week because the whole thing confused me. I thought, well, wait, so you basically have a barrister, a judge, or whatever they call them there in the UK saying, well, you know, it's conceivable. It sounds like it could have happened. So therefore, the Sun, a tabloid, it's not libelous because you know, it sounds like it might have happened.
There's something there, right? That's what they're saying. They're not saying we know he's a wife beater or physically abusive, but it's possible. Cops were called to the house. She's claiming it's true, etc.
Right. And so when, you know, but I've talked to like one or two people who were both like, when this lawsuit was filed, we all said, oh my God, it sounds like somebody from America trying to use libel laws in America in the UK, which they're totally different. The reason
the lawyers understand that.
Yes, because they said this is never going to work. He's right. He's, you know, Johnny Depp, it may be right, but much the way that, you know, the royals, you know, they're constantly saying, none of this is true. What do you mean? Why? You know what? The royals learned long ago, just leave it alone. Because if you try and take it to court, you will lose and you will only call more attention to it. And in the end, it sounded like this judge slash barrister slash, I'm not sure what the name is, basically said, well, now I'm going to like go and say that maybe it was true. And by doing that, it just made it even worse for Depp on things like Fantastic Beasts.
That's right.
But what's his future now?
Well, maybe like Mel Gibson, he'll come back, take a year off, come back, get an Oscar nomination for directing a movie and keep starring in films. Who knows?
Okay. Well, you know, one thing that is changing, special effects companies. In fact, special effects companies are always surviving by the skin of their teeth. Companies go bust, others launch, changes pretty much the way things remain. And now it's happened again. Framestore, the special effects house that won Oscars for Gravity and Blade Runner 2049, they snapped up some of their competitors. They now own Company 3, a visual effects business called Method, and both of their sister companies, by the way. Framestore is based in London, while the other companies have overlapping branches in numerous cities around the world. Will this mean they get bigger, or will consolidation mean artists getting fired? And is this a big deal or a big whoop?
I think it's a big deal, but I don't know enough about the special effects world to comment on it. I tried to figure it out. It's hard to tell. I assume some people will be fired. We know that they're always so in such a weak position compared to the studios. In the days when studios had their own special effects division, sadly, those are long gone. They're never going to take that burden on again, but they expect all these small companies to work quadruple overtime for the last few weeks for their movie. And then once they've used them, they toss them aside and don't care what happens to them. And we have a constant churn in this world. It's not good for the business. It's not good for them. Maybe this consolidation means Framestore will be able to hold its own with the studios and stay solvent. I don't know. But if you do, let us know.
Yes, you can write to us. dirt@showbizsandbox.com. That's dirt@showbizsandbox.com. You can also call and leave us a voicemail. The number to call is 888-567-SAND. That's 888-567-7263. We're also on Twitter, where our handle is @showbizsandbox. And in fact, you would, you know, you'll learn breaking news. You know, there's lots of breaking news that we post on Twitter moments after it happens. So definitely follow us there. And Facebook, facebook.com/showbizsandbox is where you can like us and follow us. You know, you mentioned you didn't know a lot about the visual effects world. If you watch any of these Avengers movies or Marvel movies or any of these movies, you will notice that there's one or two or 25 different 20, companies
yeah.
at the end of them. And there's thousands of employees, thousands of people it takes to make these films. Now, it wouldn't require thousands of employees if they weren't trying to get the movie made in a week and a half. You know, this is the one area where if you can have a baby in 1 month, if you get 10 people pregnant, you know, it's like they, and that's exactly what these studios do. And part of the problem with studios, and if you ask Technicolor and Deluxe, they will tell you the same thing because one of them doesn't really exist anymore, is that when you're working for the studios basically say, how much does it cost you to do business? Oh, a dollar? We'll gladly pay you then 95 cents. And then the competitor comes in and says, ooh, we'll do it for 90 cents. And you wind up having this, you know, race to the bottom. And that is exactly what's happened with all these visual effects companies. They basically use them until they can't squeeze them anymore.
So they go bankrupt.
Anymore.
They go bankrupt.
Correct. That's the studio model. Having worked at studios, having worked for studios on the service side, it is one where you go, wait a second, how is it that we can continue, we can't keep doing this, we can't keep stay in business if the studio keeps paying us $25 for a product that costs us $22 to produce?
Well, maybe Framestore will become big enough to hold its own. Let's hope.
Well, yes, that is the hope. But now, speaking of things that are big, okay, creating an algorithm to recommend music or movies or books, it's very hard. Remember when Netflix, they like were like the $1 million contest?
Uh-huh.
So the algorithm had to be like, the recommendation algorithm had to be like 0.0000001% better, and you won $1 million. And like, there were all these development teams trying to figure it out. Well, the best we can do now is something like this. oh, you like Star Wars? Then you'll also like Avengers.
Oh, thank you.
You read, yeah, yeah. And if you read Where the Crawdads Sing, how about Deliverance? You listen to Celine Dion? How about Chrissy Hynde? You know, Chrissy Hynde begins with a C. Celine Dion begins with a C.
That's about it.
Got a match. Right? Yeah. Companies spend tens of millions of dollars on algorithms, as I just mentioned, to do stuff like that, and they still haven't figured it out. And now some of them aren't even trying. Spotify recently revealed a new program, and this is where the big part comes, you know, the big company. This new program is for record labels. If they sacrifice higher royalties, if the record company comes along and says, all right, we won't take the higher royalty, Spotify will let them peg certain tracks as priorities and thus push those songs higher up on its recommendation list. Call it, what's the best word? Like money for music, maybe. Maybe you could call it tithing for tracks. Yeah. I don't know. Or how about pay or play? Ooh. I mean, that's kind of catchy. That's yeah. Pay or, you know what? Ooh, I've got a good one. Payola,
oh,
maybe.
Oh, nice.
And here's my question, though. Is this a big deal or a big whoop?
Well, it's a big deal. They're trying everything they can to be the place where people discover music. They're also trying to get more money out of the labels and the artists. But that's what they say they're not trying to do. They're not asking for money up front. They just want a lower royalty rate for those particular tracks while they're in this program. So the idea is they said they did this so any artist of any level can do it. Like a big label has money. They could afford to pay out money. But little guys couldn't do that. So, oh, don't worry. There's no money up front. You just get a little lower royalty rate. So say you've got an album that's celebrating its 10th anniversary, or you see it gaining traction for some reason, or it went viral, or it's used in a commercial and you want to goose it up, you can go to them and say, all right, put us in this program. They'll goose you up towards a certain areas where people are looking for new music, and your record may gain traction. They say the end result is that you could get a better return on investment than if you stuck with your regular royalty rate and didn't get pushed forward. So that it puts the artists and the labels in charge, they say. They're the ones that can say, hey, I want my song to have a shot at this, rather than just Spotify deciding what to do or letting the anonymous algorithm. They don't see this with a lot of new music. They think it's more likely for stuff that you're ready to promote or re-promote from your catalog. And you want to take advantage of it. You get a little traction, push it up. Maybe you'll, you know, just like you got some video going, run a couple of YouTube ads, and it can catch fire. That's their idea. That's what they say. It's a little concerning, but we'll see where it ends up. To me, it does sound like pay for play.
Yeah, and you said that it puts the labels and artists in charge.
That's what Spotify says, not me.
Okay, well, I would say it puts the labels in charge. I wonder if the artists get a say.
No, but you can be an independent artist and have nothing to do with it. You don't have to be on a label. You know, I can put out a song and then join this program. It's my choice. If you control your music, obviously whoever is in charge of it gets to make the decision, whether it's a Warner Brothers record label or an indie artist like Annie DeFranco. The question is, the people in charge, even small indie artists, they're arguing they can afford to do this because they don't have to fork over money. They just make a business decision that it would be better for them to make this song more visible for a little while in this program. And for that period only, they will sacrifice a higher royalty rate. That's the idea.
Well, I kind of, you know, wonder if you're like, well, Annie DeFranco, okay, maybe a bad example. But, and you suddenly you get, you know, a big hit, whether that then means that you're...
Then you jump out of the program. Know, you know, you can
or,
do it.
Or that your PA fee, your concert fee goes up. Or
right,
more
right.
People
That's the idea.
Up.
You got a hit. You want to turn into a real hit. You got a little bubbling under going on. You want to supercharge it. This is the way to do it. That's their argument.
Well, the new way to do things in television syndication, of course, is to not actually be syndicated. In fact, Judge Judy, she is a, you know, it's a big court program here in the U.S. Judge Judy now has a new home. We talked about her in the past. The daytime syndication giant is currently airing her 25th and final season for CBS. Now that Shinlin, which is her last name, gets about $47 million a year for her hugely profitable court show, her syndicator CBS pulled out its calculator. They just paid her $100 million for the rights to reruns, okay? Reruns. And she'd want another $50 million to make new episodes. Again, let me break out the calculator here and carry the two. The one minus the seven. It does not pay at all. They decided it was cheaper just to sell reruns for the next 3 years, okay? So now Shineland's next show will be called Judy Justice, and it's airing on Amazon's free streaming service, imdb.tv. I don't even know what this is, except it's sometime down the road, once the current season ends, and you might even expect a new title, by the way. What is this, a big deal or a big whoop? What is going on here?
It's a big deal. She's the number one show in syndication. She is moving to a streaming service. The Internet Movie Database, we go to all the time. People in the industry do. They're going to have imdb.tv. So all those people who say, what's the name of that episode or who is that actor? And they go to IMDb to check it out. It's not just people in the industry. Other people use it too. And they're hoping to turn it into a streaming service somehow. But this is why it's a big deal. Every grandchild in America is going to have their grandparents calling them up and saying, I can't get Judge Judy. Where is this? I don't understand. I'm online and I press stop and it's not working. You know, we're going to help them all figure this out. And, you know, in fact, my mom, she doesn't have streaming on her TV in her bedroom. She lies on her bed at 3 o'clock every day, many days, and watches Judge Judy for an hour. Doesn't care if it's a rerun. I'm like, you saw this. She goes, I don't remember it. Now, she's not going to pull out her laptop and go to imdb.tv. So the audience that does this, that watches Judge Judy, is not a natural audience for a streaming service. TVs are getting better. They're easier to use. You got a smart TV in the living room. You can just set up that app and do it. But that's not the sweet spot for people in their 60s, 70s, and 80s. And that's her prime audience. So it's a bit of a risk. I'm sure it will pay off for imdb.tv because it brings people to their service. But she may well lose viewers.
Well, I love the best part of this story, by the way, is, and this is a hat tip to Brooks Barnes over at the New York Times, because on Twitter, he said, take a lesson, Hollywood people who give us so canned, give us quotes that they are canned, yeah. Unusable for news releases. This one from Judge Judy on her new deal with Amazon is how it's done. And she said in her press release, I'm over the moon to be in business with Amazon Studios, and continuing this incredible journey with them on a new platform is so exciting. I used to yell at my husband, Jerry, for all the packages he had ordered from Amazon every day. I have enough mouthwash in the cabinets to keep the entire planet's breath fresh until the next millennium. The doorbell never stops ringing. The dogs don't even bark at the delivery people anymore. After I signed this deal, I apologized to Jerry. Who would have thought that the Scheinlins and Amazon would be mishpucha?
Well done.
I thought, you know, when I read that, I went, yeah, that's how it's done. That's how it's done. I mean, here we're talking about it.
No, so. That was very clever. Good marketing to keep her the lovable, you know, lovable judge rather than the massively wealthy tycoon that she is.
Yes. Well, and, you know, the whole legal thing doesn't work out. She could always go out and sell, you know, mouthwash, I guess. Yeah. I don't know. Well, speaking of streaming, just as more and more people join the world of streaming, Netflix is launching a linear channel. Wait, what? In France, mon Dieu, it's not on a cable service. You can only access it if you're a subscriber, by the way. So just think of it as another way of accessing their program. Voila. They chose France because it is a high concentration of older viewers who might prefer to simply be offered TV shows and movies the way they're offered on ABC, NBC, or, you know, TV5. You know, in France. Monday at 8, Stranger Things. Tuesday at 10. House of Cards. So they're just seeing if it's a useful add-on. Big deal or big whoop?
I guess it's a big whoop at this stage. I'm not quite, you know, why not do a cable channel, I guess, in a way? Have lots of advertising. Say, you know, if you don't want to pay $8 a month, we'll get it part of your, you pay, you know, $1 a month and it's part of your cable package. You won't have all the newest stuff, but you're getting a bigger and bigger library as it goes on. Why not start programming it on a cable channel? It'd be like TV Land for Netflix, you know? You got your new hot stuff, which will be on Netflix, but you want to make it easier for older people and people to stumble across your shows or discover old ones. You got that library there. I don't know.
You know, this was also the second I heard this. I went, well, of course it's in France. And I don't mean that in a negative way. I mean, France has certain rules and regulations about content. And one of them is that a certain portion of it has to be in French. Oh, and yeah. And Netflix has been facing a lot of backlash in France and in place. Well, I'll just stick with France. In France, because France doesn't like you to just be able to walk into the country and let people like watch whatever they want. They like to be able to say, no, these are the shows that we want our citizens watching. And
you make it sound like censorship. They just want to encourage French programming. They want to make sure they protect the French film and TV industry. They don't try to censor what you show. They're just saying you must support French programming. We don't want to have all Hollywood and whatever, you know, stuff. We want to have our own.
Correct. And that's kind of what I was trying to say.
Yeah, well, people don't realize that, you know, this show, we record it every week, and then we record it again in French and in Mandarin and Cantonese. It's not easy to keep our show all over the world like we do. Keep going.
And Portuguese is next, by the way.
I've got to work on my... Oh, that's so hard. Okay.
Sim. People listen to and perform rap and hip hop all over the world, which is what we do when we're not recording Showbiz Sandbox. But just as some cultures and countries initially resisted rock and roll, they're having trouble with rap. Take China. For 3 years, they've had talent shows involving rap. The respectable series Rap of China did what you would expect a quote unquote respectable show about rap to do, you know, get poor ratings and poor reviews. The upstart show Rap for Youth on Bilibili.
That's a good rap word, you know, Bilibili. Don't be silly.
Well, they have more street cred, but it's kind of, they're mired in controversy. Now, you might ask why. Apparently, one of the hopefuls had their lyrics censored before going on the air. Well, it is rap, and the lyrics can get pretty raw and sexist in the U.S. I don't know, except that here's the thing, Michael, they weren't censored for swearing or calling women derogatory names like hoes or, you know, Madam Vice President, maybe. They were censored for containing lyrics that are anti-sexist and condemning sexual harassment. I got to look more expensive for containing lyrics. I read that correctly, actually. One of the lines cut was reportedly,
quote,
using gender to define value is the era going backwards, end quote, which we can only assume hits harder in Mandarin. Maybe it's different. Maybe it means something else. I don't know. Big deal or big whoop?
It's a big whoop. We know about censorship in China. It's just hilarious that what they're censoring is something about treating women with respect. Hilarious and sad.
And yet, I'm sure when we are aired in China, that whole story will not be part of the show. we'll just cut to the next story.
Yeah, absolutely. Our shows are 27 minutes long in China.
That's right.
And an hour and 30 minutes in Hong Kong.
Not anymore.
That's right. No, yeah. Maybe Taiwan.
Well, our next story is actually a bit of inside baseball. In fact, it is inside baseball, where we analyze some of the headlines that have the entertainment industry buzzing. We'll explain what they mean for the business and, more importantly, how they affect you. Now, here's how these news stories will affect you this week. You will be able to watch Croods 2, the movie that's coming out, I think, November 25th, in movie theaters, by the way. You're going to be able to probably watch it premium video on demand for, probably $20. Probably December, 17th, 18th, somewhere in there. That's about five weeks.
That's a minor fact. The main point is that one of the chains, Cinemark, is publicly saying we're going to get flexible on theatrical windows. Why? Because of COVID. They say we're going to be flexible and dynamic on a film-to-film basis during COVID. They're trying to say, look, this is not forever, but we're trying to be realistic and save our business. So
we talked about this. We said that there was going to be a pan. Well, what the industry, certain people in the industry have been calling pandemic windows, okay, and other people in the same industry are calling precedent windows. That you might call it a pandemic window, but as soon as it's done, you'll never be able to go back to normal. But
that's not true, though. I don't agree with that at all.
Well, here's the thing. Mark Zorati, head of Cinemark here in the U.S., said, we have always been flexible on windows.
Except we never would do what you want. We're always flexible, except never more less than 90 days.
It's always been about the terms.
Flexible as long as you do what we want.
Well, and they said, we would always be willing to play a Netflix movie, but it's been about the terms. And their terms are, okay, you show it, and then we put it on Netflix at the same time. And they said, that doesn't really work for us because you're giving us a product that can be bought down the street. In fact, it can be bought at home and delivered to the home. So no. You know, we need a product that can only be had in our movie theaters.
Right, but there's been a change. The head of Cinemark says we are going to be flexible. So there were films made by Universal that were going to be playing at AMC. They made a deal. Universal has the option to take those movies like The Croods 2 and Let 'Em Go and Freaky to pay-per-view 17 days after they debut in theaters, mainly AMC. Now Cinemark is saying, we're going to play those films, we may play those films. We're thinking of playing those films. And, you know, we're going to try to work out a deal and see what's going to happen. But we are not closing the door on those films automatically. So that is a big change. And they're doing it in the context of a universe where Disney is pulling more films from the release schedule. There are no movies to show. So it's getting darker and darker here in the U.S. Studios just don't want to seem to release anything. And if they don't release some movies and invest in theaters and say, all right, we're going to show these movies on pay-per-view, but we can show them in theaters for a month. And any money you spend, you're investing in the exhibitor experience and the fact that you don't want exhibition to be gone a year from now when you want to release the next Avengers film. So you're investing in the industry. You're not being nice. You're not helping out somebody else. You're helping out yourself by saying, here's some steady product and here's some investment in the industry and the movie going experience so that when we can turn the lights on, like they already have in Japan and China and to a degree in Korea, that we'll still have theaters there ready to go. Right? Because what did NATO say this week?
Well, NATO said, look, if the government doesn't step in with a subsidy, we're done. Okay. So it's not about whether we need it or not, you know, whether they should or not, they need to. Because much like farmers who you subsidize so that on lean years, they can stick around and be there next year to plant more crops and feed the population. If we aren't there, if we don't get subsidized, we will not be there on the other side of this. 70% of us will go out of business.
Well, they said 70% of theaters in North America will reorganize under bankruptcy or go out of business entirely. So they're not saying 70% of them will be done and shuttered and never come back. But they are saying it will be a huge financial blow. A significant chunk of them may go out of business entirely. And of course, we are not talking about AMC and Regal by and large. They may shrink some locations, but by and large, we're talking about the half of the theatrical industry that is mom and pops and smaller chains up to, 500 locations. Those are the ones that are going to be gone forever. And guess what? If they close, AMC's not stepping in because they're in small markets where a multiplex just doesn't work. So you're looking at a big chunk of the country losing their only movie theater and never coming back.
You've defined it perfectly. That is exactly correct. And look, even mid-sized chains, I've talked to the heads of some of these chains, some of whom, by the way, only got into this business. They were in the restaurant business or they were in some other retail business. They call their movie theater stores, to give you some sense. I'm serious. They're calling them store, which, by the way, technically they are. They are a retail outlet for content and for, an experience. But they have said that they got into this business 10 years ago. They learned it from the ground up. They took a huge risk in doing so in the middle of their career. And they see themselves having to do the same thing probably within the next month or two.
Mm-hmm.
Because they do not think that their company, companies that frankly are good companies and were doing just fine.
It's a existential threat. It's not that, we're always going to be ailing and need help forever. It's a natural disaster struck, and you want to protect that movie theater infrastructure because movies are big business. They employ people, and we export it all over the world and make a lot of money off of it. And if we don't step in during this natural disaster, they will be gone, and we will lose a lot more down the road than we ever will spend out if we support them right now.
And in fact, let's talk about that for just one second. And you just said, yes, the United States exports a lot of content, okay? I would say about $30 billion worth of content in the movie business.
So that's just movie, yeah. Music, TV, books. No, there's a lot of pop culture content, yeah.
Right. And so if the movie theaters aren't here in the U.S., the studios will be making fewer movies, okay? In speaking to Eddie Duchaine on the CJ Cinema Summit a couple of weeks ago, he said that 80% of their, and by the way, he runs Kinepolis, which has movie theaters in Belgium, throughout Europe, and in Canada.
Kinepolis? It's not Cinepolis?
No, it's Kinepolis.
Cinepolis
is
no
totally
idea.
Yeah, so he's the head of Kinepolis out of Europe. He said 80% of their audience comes from these big blockbuster films that Hollywood puts out. 80%. Because of course the question was, what about some of these smaller films and local titles and can't that fill in? And he said, maybe someday, but right now 80% of our audience, of our customers come out for these big blockbuster movies. So
Well, let's just say big movies. It's not just the blockbusters, though. We know Knives Out was a big hit worldwide. So it's the medium-sized Hollywood movies that also deliver. They have big stars, big names, big product. It's not always about just the movies that cost $200 million. It's all the product that Hollywood puts out.
But you mentioned, you know, Croods 2 and Universal and Cinemark. Mm-hmm. The theater owners and theater operators that I've been talking to and the film buyers I've been speaking with about Croods 2, of course, they don't say... They're not allowed to tell me the terms, which frankly, I don't want to know. Okay. I don't want to know the terms because I'd rather not know that than, you know, be the person that quote unquote leaked them. But they pretty much were told by Universal, hey, you have to, we're going to PVOD with this in 5 or 6
weeks. If you want to show it, great. If not, tough.
Correct. That's basically what they were told. If you want to show this, and by the way, you need to show this, then know that it's only going to be in theaters for 6 weeks, or it will actually be available in the home 6 weeks later. So just FYI, that's the deal. Now, Adam Aaron over at AMC Theaters is saying is, well, I get a piece of that PVOD model because I cut my deal. I cut a deal with Universal to get a piece of PVOD for 4 years and VOD for 4 years. For any film that plays in my theaters that gets pulled early. None of the other exhibitors did that. And so they're actually on the losing end of that. In this instance, and until the COVID kind of release strategy is over, he is correct. But it is not a long-term strategy.
Yeah. So it could be the death of cinema. It could be the death of a lot of small businesses in the industry. Isn't that true? It's not overstating the fact if we don't act in the next few weeks.
Yeah. Now, you know, you're saying death. Now, I just want to tell our listeners. So somehow my iPhone updated. Okay. I know you're thinking, what the hell? We're trying to get into the obituary section here. What is he talking about? My iPhone updated to iOS 14. I'm on the treadmill on Sunday. Okay. And by treadmill, I mean, I'm huffing and puffing. I'm not even paying attention to the phone. And there's a new feature on iOS 14 that reads your text to you into your AirPods. Okay. And so there I am, huffing and puffing away. And this is what I hear coming out of my AirPods.
Michael Gilt says, don't bother. I already have Alex Trebek in the obits.
I was like, oh, Alex Trebek must have died.
That's right. Well, it's nice to hear Siri tell you that. Yes, that's right. Probably one of the most notable deaths just in the last few days is Alex Trebek, the host of Jeopardy. He died at 80. And, you know, I watch it every night with my mom and my brother. A recent episode, he had the wrong player go first on Double Jeopardy. And I went, ooh, that's sort of a mistake. I don't know why they didn't catch that mistake. We noticed it right away. And, you know, you're going to break. And he says, coming next on Double Jeopardy, this person would go. And we're like, no, it's the other person. They've got the less money. And it's sort of the mistake that you think he might have said, you know what? I need to hang it up. And he wanted to keep doing it while he could do it well. And I think he did it well right to the very end. But it was probably just about where he'd have to say, but happily, he got to work right to the end. And, you know, now he has died, unfortunately, of course. But 36 years of hosting Jeopardy in syndication. He also did To Tell the Truth and other stuff. In fact, he passed up Bob Barker in 2014 as the person who has hosted more episodes of game shows than anyone else in history. Of course, he won Emmys and the Peabody Award went to the show. He got the Order of Canada. You know, it's just that TV effect where they're in your home every day, night after night, and you just feel like, oh, I know Alex Trebek. We don't know him. But he was there on the show, a comforting presence, and by God, now he's done. But he, you know, we'll have new episodes through December 25th. They'll pick a new host, and I am ready to audition. I've been watching him for years and going, that's an interesting job. I think I could do it well. I see how he slips in a little bit of personality and things without getting in the way of the game. I can do that, and I want to do that, so keep me in mind.
You can write to us, dirt at show. Okay.
Yeah, reach out to Michael.
But, you know, I actually worked with Alex Trebek on a commercial back in the 90s. It was
which one? He's done a lot of stuff, been on TV shows and movies as Alex Trebek.
This was a commercial for, I guess, the show was moving both Wheel of Fortune and Jeopardy were moving from one network to another.
A syndication arm or to another, yeah. Or something, yeah.
And so they did a commercial where Vanna White and Pat Sajak were were, it was Wheel of Fortune was moving. That's what it was. So, and it was going to air right before Jeopardy. And so
the answer was, and then he said, what is Wheel of Fortune?
We were way out in the middle of nowhere in Santa Clarita. It was 900 degrees. We were told you have to bring buckets of water, gallons and gallons of water to keep yourself hydrated. And the premise of the commercial was that Pat Sajak, who is the host of Wheel of Fortune, and Vanna White, the letter turner on Wheel of Fortune, were hitchhiking and got lost or something. And that along comes Alex Trebek and picks them up and takes them with him. Okay.
Hilarious.
That was the hilarious. Yeah. And by the way, he's in like a Channel 2 news truck or whatever.
Okay.
And so that was the premise. It was my first realization that, wow, these celebrities have giant heads. And I don't mean like they have a big ego. I mean, they all had giant, like their heads were just way too big for their, I was like, you guys are like toddlers. Like you have toddler heads. But they were all incredibly nice. Oh, and boom. I must say, where we shot that that commercial is now filled with housing developments. It's well, all been filled in.
Well, two things. In 1997, they did an April Fool's joke. On that day, they switched jobs. Alex Trebek hosted Wheel of Fortune and Pat Sajak hosted Jeopardy, and nobody said a word. They just did it. You know, so yeah. You turn on, you're like, huh? There they were all night. So that was fun. And right now, speaking of Wheel of Fortune, they are just launching a celebrity Wheel of Fortune in ABC primetime to follow up how to, you know, Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. They're going to have a charity show where celebs get on Wheel of Fortune and compete to raise money for charity. So Pat Sajak is still chugging along. However,
well, you know, Alex Trebek for years was known for the mustache he had, right?
Of course. Yeah. Yeah.
And he said he shaved it on a whim, that just one day he was in the makeup room and he said, you know what? Give me those scissors. Give me that razor. And he said, I want to see what I look like without it. And he just shaved it off. And when he went on the set that day, there were gasps from the crew, gasps from the audience. And then he went home and his two kids and his wife didn't say a word.
Well, the nice thing is that's what you want out of those shows. You want comfort, routine, familiarity. And so anything like him growing a beard, which he did once, and then the next day he shaved it down to a goatee and then he got rid of it. You know, any change at all is seismic when you're talking about a show like Judge Judy or Wheel of Fortune or Jeopardy. So every little thing matters. That's true. But that show will go on long after Alex Trebek is gone. And also gone is producer and writer Jeremy Stevens. He's an Emmy-winning writer, but he got his start on Broadway as an actor. Then he co-created The Electric Company, the PBS series. That alone would have made him, you know, memorable right up to this day. He worked on all sorts of variety shows, including Saturday Night Live and the faceplant of a season, the disastrous 1981 season, which did launch Eddie Murphy. And Jeremy Stevens said it was all worth it to see Eddie Murphy catching fire. But he worked on shows like Dear John, Mork and Mindy, What's Happening? And then in season one, he joined the staff of Everybody Loves Raymond alongside creator Phil Rosenthal. Eventually, he became an executive producer and winning Emmys for the show. Then he went to Russia to oversee the Russian version of Everybody Loves Raymond. He did that for 7 seasons. That show had spinoffs and more spinoffs, and it's still on the air. It's probably the most successful foreign language remake of a U.S. sitcom in history. Those formats do transplant and get redone in other countries, but rarely as successful as that one. He was just a really positive, life-affirming guy, apparently. And in fact, Jeremy Stevens told Rosenthal, his friend on Raymond, he said, I'm going to become a life coach. And Rosenthal said, so what else is new? Like, all he ever did was mentor people and be a mensch. So, you know, a great, happy career for Jeremy Stevens.
Well, also passing away was Bobby Cowan. And if that name sounds familiar, it's because, you know what? She was behind a lot of publicity for many of the stars that we consider stars today and filmmakers as well.
Did you ever deal with Rogers and Cowan when you were an agent?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. All the time. I still deal with them. They are, Rogers and Cowan is the PR firm that handles CinemaCon, which, by the way, has moved from the March-April timeframe, spring, to August. It will still be held in Las Vegas, still at Caesar's Palace. It just dawned on me as I said that we will be in Las Vegas in August. That's going to be hot.
And Pfizer wants you to believe you'll have their vaccine to thank for it.
Correct.
But She is not of Rogers and Cowan. She is just part of that family. She was born into a PR dynasty, and she took to publicity as a teenager. It was the family business, and she never looked back. Much like Jeremy Stevens, you know, you always hear about the jerks in the industry, the people who throw shit and treat everybody like dirt and yet somehow keep climbing to the top. And you go, why? But apparently you don't have to be a jerk. She was a really great, positive personality, and she dominated music PR, especially in the 1970s. She even worked for a while on staff at Motown and Casablanca Records. She's beloved is the only word you can come up with. Everybody had nothing but beautiful, happy things to say about her. In fact, she took journalist Cameron Crowe under her wing when he was a 14-year-old kid. Someone had to do it. And he was writing for indie mags. And she worked with everyone. The Rolling Stones in their 72 tour. Michael Jackson when he was starting his solo career. Bill Withers, one of the great artists of all time. Cheech and Chong, Diana Ross. Yes. Graham Parsons, John Prine, Pink Floyd. Even Famous Amos's Cookies. Oh, I was
she was just hungry that
last
day.
Week, but you forgot. There you go. She was hungry that day. That's right. And she has spent years living with Alzheimer's, unfortunately. And then in recent, just a little short time ago, she had hip surgery and led to her decline and death at 78. But a powerful, positive career. And if you can, you know, look at all the sweet, warm words from all these musical artists and giants that came out, a really beloved figure.
And, well, you want to talk about beloved figures. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, okay, you know what? Actually, I was going to go on to a much beloved figure. But before we get to that beloved figure, and by the way, this is a horrible transition because now what this other guy, Charles Gordon, isn't beloved? No.
Stop. Let me go. Oscar-nominated producer Charles Gordon has died at 73 of cancer. He and his brother Lawrence did a lot of great work together. They did the Oscar-nominated film Field of Dreams. Great movie. The hit October Sky that helped launch Jake Gyllenhaal. That's a very sweet film. They're still looking to turn that into a stage musical. Die Hard, he worked on. Waterworld, nobody's perfect. The Rocketeer at Disney, which I still have fond feelings about. I don't know why, but a nice career. And his older brother Lawrence said, in fact, Charles was more like an older brother to him, which is a very sweet thing to say about a sibling. He was just, again, another person that leaves a trail of good feelings in his stead. But you were going to move on to one of the big actors of all time. Everybody knows he died because it happened like last week. Sean Connery.
Yes. And, you know, you mentioned that Bobby Cowan had Alzheimer's and spent several years dealing with Alzheimer's. Sean Connery, toward the end of his life, he had dementia. His wife said, you know, his quality of life toward the end was just not very good.
Right. It was kind of a blessing that he died in his sleep, went peacefully and quietly, and it was time.
Yeah, he died at the age of 90, as you said. Of course, he won an Oscar for The Untouchables.
That's the Chicago way.
Yeah. You put one of, you know, they put one of yours in the hospital, you put one of theirs in the ground.
In the morgue.
Yeah, in the morgue, yeah. Which, by the way, technically might be at a hospital. I'm just saying, they're both in the hospital.
Good point. Obviously, a great actor, Scottish-born, Oscar winner, Murder on the Orient Express, The Wind and the Lion, Time Bandits, a movie I love. Big hits worldwide, but not big hits in the U.S. The Name of the Rose, huge hit. Highlander, also a big hit. And then, of course, things like The Hunt for Red October, Hitchcock's Marnie, Indiana Jones, The Rock. But one of my favorite films, The Man Who Would Be King, a John Huston film where he's co-starred with Michael Caine. Great, great movie. If you've never seen it, it's just a bromance, an adventure tale based on Rudyard Kipling's story. Just a real treat. Check it out. And he's done other stuff, too. What else is he? I know he's done other stuff. I just can't seem to think of what it might be.
Wait, we're talking about Sean Connery?
Yeah.
I think he was a stuntman at first.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah. That must be it. And Bond. James Bond, of course.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, he did that too, by the way.
Yes, Bond, the first Bond, the best Bond, even according to all the other Bonds who are still alive. You remember now and forever. It was an albatross around his neck, and yet it made him rich and let him do all that other stuff as well. But my favorite story about Sean Connery is the movies he didn't make. Everybody's got these stories, but, you know, he just not the best picker of scripts always. He was offered the role of Gandalf in Lord of the Rings. Everybody said, obviously, Sean Connery needs to be Gandalf. Peter Jackson pled with him to play Gandalf. He's like, what? Little hobbits? I made Darby O'Gill and the Little People, and I'm not making that mistake again. So he turned it down. Then he also, before that, was offered Morpheus in The Matrix, the role eventually played by Lawrence Fishburne. Morpheus in The Matrix. He said, what is this nonsense? A pill? No. And finally, he said, you know what? I keep turning down these comic book movies, these silly things. I guess I should do one of them. So he said yes to The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. Flop. It's like, oh, Sean, that's the movie you picked? Oh, well, it's a great comic book, not a good movie.
Well, and we are a great podcast, not a good movie.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But we are done for this week, aren't we?
Yes. And by the way, in parting, I have to say, Chuck Gordon, Charles Gordon, the producer of Die Hard. And,
you knew
and
him. You worked with him.
Yeah, I worked with him when I worked at Disney. And he was always incredibly pleasant. Sean Connery, the two times I met him, also incredibly pleasant. I mean, really, like, he totally lived up to, you know, the hype, so to speak.
Yeah, you know, I'm a journalist, so people say, oh, was he nice? I'm like, well, I would hope so. I'm printing everything they say. But, you know, so if you can't be nice, then you know they're really jerks. And that happens.
But oh, yeah.
When they're dealing with people behind the scenes like you, that's when you get more of a glimpse of what they might be like in real life. So good to hear.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, look, I only met Connery at his agency, you know, so basically, I don't know, maybe he thought I better be nice to this guy. He might be controlling my career. But I by the way, I highly doubt that. But you know, he was just very pleasant to be around and to speak with. Much like, by the way, we always are. We're pleasant to be around and to speak with. And we appreciate that you listen to us blather on every week. But you know what? To make sure you don't miss our blathering, please do subscribe to us on iTunes, the Google Play Store, Microsoft Marketplace, Stitcher, anywhere they give podcasts away for free. You can rate and review our show there at any one of those podcast aggregators. It does help us out when you do. So again, subscribe to us, rate and review us. That information can be found on our website, showbizsandbox.com. Links to all of the stories we've talked about today can also be found on our website, showbizsandbox.com. That's where you'll find those ways to contact us. Dirt@showbizsandbox.com is our email address. That's dirt@showbizsandbox.com. You can leave us a voicemail, 888-567-SAND. That's 888-567-7263. Or you can follow us on Twitter, @showbizsandbox. Is our handle. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/showbizsandbox is where you can like our page. Again, showbizsandbox.com is our website. The music that you hear at the beginning and end of each show is by the popular indie rock group MGMT. They can be found on their own website, whoismgmt.com. Michael Gilts has a website. Every week, it is something new and exciting. What is it this week, Michael?
Well, this week, the answer to that question is michaelgilts.com, but the actual question is, who is the next host of Jeopardy? I can do it. I swear to you, I would be a good pick.
And on MichaelGilts.com, you can find all of his work covering the entertainment industry. Some of my work can be found on CelluloidJunkie.com. Until next week, play nice.